Blog Talk Radio.
What do you know? What do you know? What do you know?
The birds and the bees are wise to the light.
What do you know?
So they took to the trees and took to the sky.
What do you know?
On top of the chain and safe from the rain.
What do you know?
Won't you know about the ways of the underside?
What do you know?
I bought a hot shot bag from an old Van Guinea.
What do you know?
Cause they're hip to the moon and hip to the light.
What do you know?
And yep, but the ass, cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
Won't you know about the ways on the underside?
What do you know?
In two perfect ways in the night.
What do you know?
One crashes on my left and one on my right. It's all fire and brimstone, baby, so let's go outside.
What do you know?
It's all fire and brimstone, baby. I got my brand new pistol, baby.
What do you know?
I'm going to play this intro again, by the way. Darby's having some technical difficulties, as am I. You couldn't tell. So we're going to play this again, wait for her to connect.
You ain't got a penny. know?
Don't you know about the ways on the underside?
What do you know?
In two perfect ways in the night.
What do you know?
One crashes on my left and one on my right. It's all fire and brimstone, baby, so let's go outside.
What do you know?
It's all fire and brimstone, baby. I got my brand new pistol, baby.
What do you know?
Yeah. Hang on. Shut that off. Okay, there we go. All right. Hi, finally. Welcome.
Hey.
That's all I get after that. I mean, after that, like, very complimentary, you know, sort of, like, entrance that I just gave you. Like, it's good. It's good
yeah,
that you're
I know.
On.
Sorry, I was just catching my breath from the long stream of obscenities I was screaming at my computer.
I see. So you think that's how you win an argument with your computer, the scream of obscenities?
Yeah, pretty much.
So sounds very unlike you, I got to say.
Yeah.
Not that
I
you never cursed,
but I mean...
Compassion.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, okay, I got you. Inanimate objects are different, so, you know.
Right.
Right, I got you. Okay, I'm with you. All right. Okay, so let's talk about what annoyed you this week. What was the number one thing that annoyed you this week?
I think it was probably that I missed that I would have gone down to Olympia to help with speak up for that vaccine bill that's on the table in Washington State, and I didn't know about it until after, so that bummed me out. That annoyed me. But hopefully it'll go through.
I told you that story earlier about the woman who posted on that group I'm in, and she's, you know, like an immunologist, and she actually went down there and talked to the person who apparently submitted the bill. So,
well, I'm,
you know,
I'm glad
that
she
was
there was... Yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool thing to learn. Like it's what I love about social media. Like I never would have known who that person was before she went and did that and then posted about it in the group, you know.
Yeah. Totally. What about you?
So. Well, you know, it's really funny. The two things that I typically get the angriest about are mythicism and vaccines.
Yeah.
Like, that's really strange, I got to tell you. For whatever reason, those are the things that piss me off the most. I never knew about mythicism before I became an atheist. Like, I never knew that there was even this, you know, that there was even this thing going on until I became an atheist. And then I started getting exposed to these, you know, to these, like, pseudo-arguments and the pseudo-scholarship, and it was being passed off to me as this is what is true, this is what you should believe. And I think there was a little bit of time where not only did I entertain the idea, but I actually thought that it might be legitimate. And then, you know, sort of like you do the background research, then you do the background research.
I think you were one of the first people I talked to when I started to do some research on it and realized that, wow, there is some really dumb shit out there about that subject. And so,
yeah,
I feel a little bit like I dragged you in by the hair, and I'm kind of sorry about that, but I'm sure you were already,
it's all right,
already onto it, but yeah. Anyway.
Well, I mean, there are, you know, and I'll give you an example. I mean, obviously, the testimonium, right? And we've talked about that on the show before. And for those who don't know, the testimonium is in, is that one in book 18 or book 20? I can't remember.
I don't know. I have to look it up. I don't know off the top of my head.
I think it's 18. So, and it's basically this long message, like the previous, you know, Josephus said two things about Jesus. Number one, he said that, you know, Jesus was the brother of James, you know, and Christ was his name, or he's called the Christ, I guess. I mean, anyway.
Right.
And then there's this other one that basically, yeah, that basically talks about this guy Jesus and what Christians believe and da 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 da. And I'm not going to read the whole passage. But there's some arguments. There's a lot of historical argument and conversation about the TF, right, about the testimony. Like, there is a lot of discussion about that. But
right.
None of the, well, outside of a few, and one of them a pretty heavy hitter, you know, in the in that sort of historical community. In fact, he's, you know, his name is Feynman, I believe, or Flanagan, one of the two. But he actually is considered the kind of quintessential expert on, you know, on Josephus, and he's kind of fallen into this Eusebius / you know, Josephus link, where Eusebius actually was the one who wrote the TF, and it wasn't just, you know, sort of an interpolation by later Christian authors or, you know, Greek assistants or whatever, and that the problem that we run into is that you will have an issue with consistency inside of, like, ancient texts, right, Darb? Like, we talk about that sometimes. Like, you know, because a lot of times they're copied, and they used to be copied by hand, so obviously some things are going to be, you know, sort of muddled, if you will, in the process of those things being translated and carried over and that kind of thing.
Right.
But we can oftentimes identify interpolations simply because we can look at, I gave this analogy earlier, you can, let's say we have three sentences from an author, and sentence number one and sentence number three both match up, okay? They are both, you know, written the same sort of grammar and or grammatical errors and kind of the same tone, and they make sense. Sentence number two makes sense with sentence number one and number three, so they all technically make sense together, but sentence one and sentence three can, for example, exists without sentence two. Sentence two doesn't sound like sentence one or sentence three, but it still fits in the arrangement, even if it's, you know, wasn't there originally. That's an interpolation. Sentence two is the interpolation. In the sense that just because the interpolation occurred doesn't mean that sentence one and sentence three never happened or that they were also forged. I mean, that's a completely and totally separate argument. And I ended up getting into it with this guy who was repeating a lot of these really unsophisticated and ridiculous arguments, you know, about the TF and about how, you know, the majority of historical scholars consider it to be a, you know, basically, I can't recall exactly the words he used, so I'll paraphrase. What he said was that they all flatly reject its authenticity. And I found that to be completely absurd because that's nowhere even close to the truth. Not at all. Not in any sense of the word. In fact, I've never heard you know, I've never heard a historian say that there is zero authenticity and it is just flatly rejected. The closest thing that I've heard to that is that, yeah, we're still debating it. It's still being talked about, still being discussed. But in the same hands, we have this consensus that we probably most likely are very is. But anyway, the number of people who aren't aware that this is actually people are actually arguing that this is an entire forgery, it's just completely, I mean, it's absurd. The majority of experts I've read, it's pretty absurd. You know, there are a lot of very valid, very reasonable, very rational arguments, and even if the entire TF is false, completely and totally irrelevant. Completely and totally irrelevant because Josephus talks about Jesus in another part of, you know, of Antiquities that was that is not considered to be an interpolation at all. So, anyway, that's what annoyed me. That guy, that asshole, thought he knew what he was talking about. He obviously didn't. He listens to stupid people. Hey, did you know that there's this thing called secular? Hold on, I'm going to tell you what it is, Darb. It's called. Okay. This is beautiful. It's called secularactivism.org. Okay?
Okay.
You would love this, actually, your buddy Ryan Bell, because you really like Ryan Bell, right?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I don't know him. I enjoyed his blog. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's on the secularactivism.org. And guess who appears on secularactivism.org?
Lots of people? I don't know.
No. Actually, I've only found two so far, but that didn't mean there aren't more. There are only two people on this. It's your buddy Ryan Bell and Richard Carrier, PhD.
Okay. What do you mean appears on?
Okay, so they appear on this secularactivism.org. What it is that they're offering webinars. Richard Carrier is offering a webinar. You'll like this. So Richard Carrier is offering a webinar. And it's $59 to register for the class, and then you have to buy his book.
Oh, dear. Okay.
I mean, that's pretty convenient, though, isn't it? Like, hey, I'm teaching this class, now buy my book.
What class is it in?
Oh, there are great ones. Hold on. Let me see. Hold on. Let me go over here, and I'm going to take a look. Okay. Naturalism is a Worldview, How to Build a Sound Philosophy of Life. This is a good one. Intro to Biblical Scholarship on the New Testament with Dr. Richard Carrier.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Will Ryan Bell remain an atheist? That was one of them.
That's funny.
Let me see here. Hey, our buddy Peter Boghossian did appear on this, though, so I guess that's at least okay, even though he hung out with Richard Carrier. Here we go. Here's a course. Here's a course. Hang on, I'm trying to tell you. Questioning or Defending the Historicity of Jesus with Dr. Richard Carrier. And then you actually have to buy his book on the historicity of Jesus, Why We Might Have Reason for Doubt.
There's no accreditation to any of this, by the way.
Like, there are no certifications. There's no accreditation. Like, there's nothing. They get no credit for this anywhere. Like, it's just all for personal growth.
That's fine. I don't see any problem with that. It's just, you know, I mean, I think
I do.
It's like, I don't know. It depends on what you technically Richard Carrier is.
If you're doing it solely for personal growth, I understand. But whenever you say that you're only going to get personal growth out of this, that's not the same thing.
What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is that if I tell you the only thing you're going to get out of something is personal growth, the only thing that really matters is whether or not you feel like it's for personal growth. You know what I'm saying? Like, some people will assume they'll be getting some sort of credit for this, that, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you that
people are going to be duped into thinking that this is actual, like, this is an actual, you know, webinar where you can get, like, you're registering, you're a college student. You know, I mean, they call themselves a nonprofit educational project on their front page.
Well,
they're nothing like those for-profit ventures, by the way.
Well, I mean, Dan Fink teaches philosophy classes, and he has a PhD in philosophy, but he's very clear that you don't get college credit for it, but that it's for, you know, if you have an interest in philosophy, and he's quite qualified to teach them. I don't see the real problem with that. I mean, I think Ryan Bell did a list of his favorite books that he read over the last year, and one of them was Why I'm Not a Christian, which I haven't read, but I've heard it's pretty good. I mean, I don't know.
Are we going to disagree on that point?
Maybe. I don't see anything wrong with it.
I don't see anything wrong with its existence. One of the things that I don't like about, you know, these sort of like online webinar, take this course online kind of thing is that the biggest problems I have is the way that it is marketed and its, you know, and its lack of regulation. It's kind of like a supplement. Like, it doesn't have to pass any tests in order to get certified by the FDA, but it can technically call itself whatever it wants and say it can do whatever it wants because there's nobody there to regulate it. I mean, there's
okay,
a reason
what is
why
it, what is
we
it
have
claiming?
Accreditation. Do what? Well, I'm not
but
saying
what
that
it's,
I'm not
what's
saying
it
that
claiming?
It's claiming. Well, hang on. I'm not saying that it's
okay.
claiming anything. What I'm saying is that I take issue with unregulated, you know, places of so-called education that try to act like colleges or advanced forms of education when they know that they are very well not that. That's what
okay.
I have a problem with because I think that that unnecessarily dupes people. Look, you know, I wanted to take a you know, more thorough course on you know, on religious studies, for example, because religion fascinates me. I love religion. And, you know, but if I did, it wouldn't be because I was going for a degree. It would be because I was trying to obtain a better education. But I'm going to go to an actual college for that. I'm not going to go to, you know, the first place I find online that's the cheapest. I mean.
Okay.
Anyway. All right, fine. That was very funny. Darby just, I got to read this because it's hilarious. Darby sent me a message. She said, I think we should move on to zombies because besides the one that theoretically staggered around Galilee. That was beautiful. Darby, that was gorgeous. That was wonderful. Like, I'm happy about that message. Anyway, okay. All right, Walking Dead immorality. Okay, so you give me your best moral conundrum. Actually, give me the shittiest moral conundrum, and then we'll move forward to the best moral conundrum.
I want to say why we're talking about this. That's what I want to say. That's why I want to say why I want to talk about this. Oh, don't sigh at me. Don't sigh at me, young man. I didn't sigh.
Okay, fine, I did.
How
would you react to that
in the
zombie apocalypse?
Right. With the butt of my gun. I think, so Jared, among other people, has been encouraging me to watch the show. And it was one of those things that I sort of never got around to, but I binge-watched all of it, which is actually quite painful, I have to say. I, as you know, I sort of sent you a message saying that the producer is trying to turn us all into nihilists. But the reason I like it is because I think the writing is good. I think the character arcs are good and consistent. I think they do a good job of balancing sort of the reality of the fact that you can't just have somebody live because you like them, both in the show and as a viewer, and the sort of ugly thing.
That's worked for humanity for a long time, so I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I like you. I'm going to let you live, you know, just for right now, though.
Right, right. Well, and the sort of horribly ugly things you have to do as a human being if something like that happens. So that's why I think the morality is important. Morality is important as a theme in there, and that's why we're talking about it, because and all of us theoretical, as I said to Jared earlier, you know, we can all say what we would do, but nobody really knows, and I'm sure half the people that if you were able to, you know, ask questions of the characters in that show, they would tell you, oh, yeah, I didn't think I would ever, ever do this. I mean, it is the only show that I've ever watched where I, and by the way, if you haven't watched this whole thing, just don't listen to the show until later, because spoiling is going to happen, and there's just nothing to be done about it.
I'm pretty sure when they saw Walking Dead and Morality, they're not going to listen unless they're
they're
caught up on the show, or at least know what's kind of going on. So
we will be talking about current
episodes. So if you're not there, then shut this off until you've had a chance to.
Come back later.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the only show that I've ever been, you know, sitting there staring at Netflix and yelling, somebody has to shoot that little girl in the head. I mean, it is a show that definitely brings up what's the best thing to do here, and how horrifying is maybe the best thing to do. And how much are you calling on Mr. Spock or whatever to like decide, is this the best thing to do because it will probably help more people, or is it the best thing to do because it's, you know, how do you determine morality? So anyway, that's why we're talking about it, because I think it's an interesting subject. But you go ahead. I've just been rambling for a while, so.
No, it's fine. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I really want to know, like, because last time we kind of touched on this, and you and I have sort of, I think, different beliefs in a couple of ways, like, about how to deal with moral situations, which I mean, is obviously okay, but, okay, so let's go back to one of the main ones, in my opinion, was the Dale argument, right, where they had captured this prisoner. Okay, they were in town, and then Rick got in, Rick and the boys, were out drinking at the bar, and got into a shootout, and ended up killing a couple guys, and then this kid fell on a, this young guy, I don't know if he's a kid, this young guy fell on a, the metal spike fences, like he fell into one of those,
and
so they didn't cut his leg off. They just pulled him out. I think they pulled him out of it. Was that what happened? Where they pulled him out of
They took him. They tried to cut it off, but they couldn't do it. They didn't have time. And so their alternative was to either leave him there, to the Walking Dead, the zombies that were coming at him,
right,
or pull him off and take him back with them. But they were trying to do it by cutting off his leg, which Herschel couldn't quite do in time. And so what ended up happening is, Rick, I think it was Rick, just jerked the poor guy all the way off the thing, like, you know, pretty much back over the sword, basically, that went through his calf.
Yeah.
So he screamed pain, and then they dragged him back to the farm. And it's important to note that this is fairly early, not like right at the beginning, but fairly early on. And so when you're talking about the morality of the show, it's interesting because the writers have to adjust for all this shit, and they do a really good job, I think, because in one of the first episodes, you see Rick, like, walking through this nice park so he can go find this, you know, legless zombie who's dragging herself along in the grass. And he kind of looks at her with great compassion, and he leans down and says, I'm sorry this happened to you. And he, like, went back to find her in order to put her out of what he perceived as her misery. That guy is gone by necessity several episodes later. And this is sort of in the middle of his arc, or at the, you know, in the middle beginning of his character arc, where he doesn't want to leave somebody behind. Well, he's the guy that just shot this dude's two friends dead because they were, he perceived, and he was probably correct the way the show was written, that they were endangering his group, his family.
No, they absolutely were. Do you not? They threatened them.
Oh,
and,
no, I,
you know, yeah, that's exactly what they were doing.
I think they absolutely were. And I think that the scene was written amazingly well, actually, because there was nothing so overt. Sometime, like right that very second, is the time that they should, like, fight or do something. Because the creepiness of the one guy, and to be honest, like, that guy walked in, the actor, and I was like, oh, man, there's no way that guy is good. Because the other thing I've seen him in, he was a serial killer. And there's one other thing where he was a super creepy guy. I'm like, uh-oh, this guy's probably not probably not good news. But, I mean, he's this guy that considered himself, you know, the protect and serve kind of cop, which not every cop is suddenly shooting people based on pretty good knowledge at that point, but, I mean, he just shot him dead. But maybe some of the only humans left, as far as he knows, on the planet. And so you just see him sort of evolve, and so I guess the question is, would you have done that? And, of course, yes.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you know, you wouldn't think about, well, I might be shooting, you know, two of the last human beings on the planet. I'd be like, two of the last human beings on the planet aren't about to shoot me, you know? I mean,
right, yes. That's absolutely true.
Gotta be my argument, you know.
No, it is. It is, but you have to be aware of how likely is that to be happening. And I think Rick earlier on the show would not have assumed that. He might have been suspicious of them. But once we got, you know, this is what happens to every character's morality in one way or another, arguably almost everyone. As the show goes on.
But yeah, sorry to interrupt. I mean, yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, it all evolves to where they're like, everybody's basically trying to adapt to the current environment. You know, their psyche's trying to adapt, like, their behavior's trying to adapt. I mean, their entire, you know, sort of daily methodology is kind of focused on this new schedule, this new life, these new things to worry about and be stressed out about and be concerned with. I mean, like, you know, your body physically and mentally are both kind of adapting to this new situation. So obviously you're going to have to evolve. If you want to survive in this world, you have to evolve to the environment.
Right. You have to adapt or die. Mm-hmm.
Right. But, so the governor, the thing that the governor says, I love it when he says, you know, in this world you kill or you die, and then he says, or you die, then
you
kill.
And then you kill, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, that was one of the most, that literally is such a concise way sums up the entirety of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
In my opinion. And the interesting part is that the kid being brought back to the farm and then being tied up and sort of tortured and then they basically decide to kill him. That, for me, was really like the pinnacle of moral conundrums in The Walking Dead, I think. And I'll explain why.
Okay.
The reason why is because no matter which side you had gone down, both sides could develop valid arguments. Valid enough arguments to sway people on the opposite side of the aisle. Because you want to appeal, one side wants to appeal to people's need to survive. The other side wants to appeal to people's humanity, right? But both
right.
are very, very strong things, you know? So, and in this case, it was kind of sort of equal. Like, there's 50-50 chance maybe that he'll, you know, leave us alone and never come back and never say anything. Or that he'll run and go find his friends and tell us where we are and they'll come and, you know, rape our women and, you know, kill us and take our stuff and, you know, I mean, cause a great deal, of havoc on us. And so I think that, but at the same time, I think that if people believe there's a chance that this person may not do this, that they don't necessarily have to kill him, that this is a better alternative, or that he'll probably get eaten by zombies before he ever finds his people again, or he'll die of starvation or whatever. You know, I think people don't want to think about that either. Like, they don't like the idea of doing that to another person.
Well, and there's an argument to be made that it's a much nicer thing to do to shoot somebody in the head than it is to let them starve to death while running from zombies. I mean, there's a moral question there, too. Like, do you want to die
right,
with
but
pain
I'm,
and terror?
What I'm saying is somebody's not evaluating whether or not shooting him in the head is less painful than him being eaten by a zombie. Like, nobody's evaluating. People don't usually evaluate things in that manner,
I think, Darb. I think they were. No, in this case, I think they were, though, because you have to say, like, is it worth letting this guy have a chance? We all have a chance. Does he deserve the same chance? We don't really know if he's the same as the other guys. It's that kind of stuff that caused the conversation in the first place. And you and I had sort of a talk about what was going on in that in those scenes with Dale. And I actually, my argument
is this.
I know, and I love Dale. I was pissed when Dale died.
Imagine that. I was like, oh, fucking finally that annoying guy is dead. I wasn't rooting, but I was like, okay. And then when Daryl, you know what, I hate to admit this, but I was actually more appreciative of, you know, the brief amount of character building that took place with Daryl, where he grabbed the gun from Rick and was like, you know, I got this, you know. Like, I'll do it,
yeah.
Brother. No reason for you to carry all the load, you know. And he points it at Dale, and he's like, sorry, brother, and then shoots him. Like, I was actually more appreciative of that character development from Daryl than I was of the things that Dale did before he died. Like, I mean, I'm just
Dale,
saying.
Yeah, I just love it. Dale leaned into the gun. Did you notice that?
Well, I mean, dude, his insides were, like, all over the place.
They
like, of
were,
course he leaned into
he
the gun.
He did that. He also did that for Daryl, though. See, the reason I like Dale is because, no, I'm going to tell you, because I think the reason that Dale was a good person to have around, he didn't show up and start preaching and moralizing and trying to tell everybody what to do. He actually, and he didn't act when there wasn't something to act on immediately. And he was respectful of other people's opinions on the matter, but his argument, and this is what I don't understand the objection. If you're going to have, you have a decision to make about a person who, as far as you know, is possibly neutral. You don't know. Don't know anything about this kid except for who he was associated with. But, I mean, that doesn't really stand up much because you could have associated any of those people with Merle, thereby making them like, oh, they're probably psycho killers. No. So Dale's argument was not, we should not, definitely not kill this poor kid. He hasn't done anything wrong. But if we are going to start summarily executing people that we don't know are a danger to us, for sure, shouldn't we have a conversation about it? That seems to me
that's
like
not
a reasonable
all
argument.
For one, that's not all he was saying. He wanted to have a conversation about it so that he could convince people not to do it. It's not
right.
Like he was wholly objective. So don't try to
no,
make
no, no.
him out. Like, let's just
I
have a conversation. Oh, and I'll start the side of the conversation that disagrees
no,
with you.
No, I didn't say he was objective. I said his main point was that he thought, and he said so, that he thought they should at least talk about it. The fact that he disagreed about whether they should kill him or not was secondary to, shouldn't we fucking talk about this before we just start deciding as a group? Well, any of us gets to say who lives or dies.
I don't think
situation.
It was secondary. I don't think it was secondary as much as it was just the next logical thing to occur, the next logical place. I mean, the only way that I can tell people that I disagree with their point is by asking them to open up and have a conversation about it.
Okay. Anyway, so you have a...
I don't see any other way down that. But here... Okay, so I have a couple of objections with what Dale said. For one,
okay.
we're not talking about Merle... Okay, and we're not talking about the current group. Merle didn't last long in that group. The group that the previous guy was in all behaved the exact same way. They all behaved the exact same way, and it's concluded, probably based on pretty reasonable evidence, anecdotal but still reasonable, given the situation, that the other men that those two guys were with were dangerous, which means that since the kid, the prisoner, was also with those men, that he's probably dangerous because they probably don't just recruit and allow every weak human being incapable of committing atrocious acts against other people to join them. So my issue then is that the likelihood of him being neutral is substantially smaller when that is considered. At the same time, he could have been very young, could have been scared and terrified, and that's what he had to do in order to survive. The problem is that what do you benefit by letting him go? You lose, potentially lose everything. You potentially lose everything by letting him go, but what do you really gain? What if anything do you gain by letting him go?
All right. Can I just address a couple of things that you just said, though, before we get on?
Sure.
First of all,
go ahead.
You said all of the guys in that group. You were only acquainted with two of the guys in that group. Two. The rest of them came looking for him. They didn't storm in the door. They knew somebody was in there. They took off anyway. That's A. And B.
After
I
firing
mean, later,
shots inside of there.
No, they didn't.
Should I remind you? Yes, they did. They absolutely did. They fired shots inside of that place. They weren't ducking down from nothing. They fired shots out of that place.
Well, they after, yeah, okay. So after Rick says, well, yeah, we killed them, they're dead. But they drew on us first, I promise. I mean, come on. Then they start shooting, they give up, they leave. So you don't really know anything except for those two guys were gross assholes. And also, the information the kid gives you, which may or may not be true, is exactly what you just said. He's like, I'm young, I was alone, I had nobody else. I joined up with them because they were there and I needed help. I mean, look who Daryl joins up with later out of necessity. Kid raping. Murder.
See, this is the problem.
But that doesn't
but this is the problem.
Daryl.
But hang on, and I didn't say that it did, and I would be willing to wager that if Daryl saw that, Daryl would stop it. And that's kind of the difference is that Merle was ousted and ostracized from the group because Merle was a danger to the group. And this happened very early on. I mean, we're
no,
not talking
I'm talking
about, some...
about the other... Wait, what are you talking about? I'm talking about the other guys that Daryl joined up with after Beth.
No. I know who you're talking about, and I'm about to get
okay.
there. And what I'm saying
okay.
is that Daryl didn't see them commit any truly atrocious acts aside from beating one of their own. That's
yes,
the only
that's
thing that
true.
He really witnessed them do. I mean,
but
you think that Daryl would have just...
How do you know that this kid is witness?
Well, because here's... But here's kind of the issue. I'm only concerned with my group because we're not talking about a macro group that's at stake here. We're talking about a micro group, and that micro group has limited supplies and limited resources and is very vulnerable people. It has, you know, limited amount of ammunition. Well... Not Herschel's shotgun, but everybody else's gun has limited ammunition.
So true. So true.
You know, I mean...
Hey, you never
so
asked
you
me
have
if I would have shot the kid or if I agreed with Dale about that.
Well, hang on. We'll get back to that. The problem
okay.
is that you have to consider all of these factors, and sometimes you have to make a quick decision. You know, now...
I agree.
Now... I will concede that I agree that we should have had a conversation about it, but I think that the conversation should have ended with, we have a lot better reasons to kill this guy than we do to let him live. That's my personal opinion.
I would have voted for shooting him.
I would have voted for shooting him too. I thought that we were going to disagree on this point.
No, we don't. I just think that Dale was right to bring it up and to care, to give a shit. This is the problem. And that you see the balance in the rest of the show. You hear it all the time. Like, Carol talks about how she, you know, the person that she was with when she was with Ed was burned away at the prison, and she became who she thought she should have been and always was. And then that woman was burned away, and now she's this. Now she's something else. I mean, the trick is to survive without becoming such an inhuman sort of husk of your former self. That you have no humanity left, you have no compassion for anybody else because all you are is a driving need to survive at any cost. So that's why I like Dale. Dale didn't complain about everything they did that was morally suspect.
Yeah, he fucking did. Dale had an opinion about goddamn everything.
Oh, I'm sorry, Pot. Are you talking about the kid?
I do not have an opinion about everything. There are things I do not have any opinions about.
Oh, really? What are those?
What?
The things you don't have an opinion about. I'm just waiting on.
I don't know. Like, I don't have an opinion on dance shoes, okay? Like, I have no clue about dance shoes. I am completely, totally ignorant of dance shoes.
I'm sure Dale didn't eat.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But we're not comparing me to Dale. Like, Dale, in every instance in the show, every moral conundrum, I should have said, okay, Dale had a fucking opinion. Don't act like he didn't. And he was always trying to play these side games, like messing with, you know, the chick who fucking talked too much. What was her name?
Andrea, the one that he...
Andrea,
gonna,
yeah. I've forgotten her name.
With her. Yeah. So
yeah,
the
yeah.
Thing is,
and then she's all mad at Dale. But, you know, even in that little instance, like, even in that case, he was a dick. You know, he's like, you're not going to die because I don't want you to die. And she's like, well, I don't want to feel like shit
yeah.
about killing you. You know? I mean,
I
that kind of made Dale an asshole.
No, I don't agree. I disagree. I don't think that made him a dick.
You don't think that made him a dick?
No.
Oh, we're definitely going to disagree about this. It
okay.
absolutely made him a dick.
I think he was on the level. I really do. I think part of him was hoping
that
she
where
was...
he is. It's not about him. He knows it's not about him, but he's using that to guilt her into not doing it.
What
it's
I'm
not...
saying is... all right. Whatever.
Go ahead.
No,
whatever
is...
me. Go ahead.
I think he was on the level. I think he actually would have stayed there to die because his only... And he was clear with her about this. It was the same with Amy. The only people that he's cared about, even before the fucking apocalypse, since his wife died, were those two. I have no idea why he picked those two for... Oh, jeez. He had questionable taste. He didn't want to live if she wasn't still alive, or if she gave up, he was going to give up. I actually think he was telling the truth about that. I think he was halfway trying to guilt her, but the other half, he was like, fine, fuck it, we'll stay. And I'm not really sure that's such a bad thing. I don't think that made him an asshole. But, hey, listen, we have, like, 12 minutes. I think we should probably try to cover something besides Dale. I want to know...
Jesus, okay. All right, you go.
I want to know... See, so the fact that it gets to the point... I thought there was a really interesting moral issue with Herschel and Rick, because one of the first things that I thought when Herschel got bitten and then they drag him in there to cut his leg off was, if he wasn't the only physician able to deliver a baby, I'm not sure they would have done that. I think they might have just shot him.
Really?
Yes, I do. I think that was part of the indication that Rick was sort of losing a lot of what he was falling away, because his desperation to save Herschel seemed to me a little bit over the top for what he was able to drum up for anyone other than his wife and kid at that point. And so I think he did that because he saw Herschel at the time. I don't think he continued to see Herschel that way, but I think he saw Herschel at that time mainly as someone... as a vehicle to save his wife's ass.
Man, I don't think
and
so.
So.
Like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's not like he was alone in this. No. I don't think so at all.
I think that's a good point.
I think it's an interesting theory, but I don't agree with that.
Who else
do
they ever try to save? Who else did they ever try to save by amputating, especially in the middle of a really bad situation?
I'm going to have to go back, because there was actually a conversation about severing a limb. There was a conversation at some point about severing a limb and whether or not that actually would have an effect on slowing down or preventing the virus from spreading. Like, he didn't just do that randomly. He didn't just look down at the leg and go, let's just cut the fucking thing off. Like, that was said somewhere in the series, and I'm going to have to go back at some point and recall that.
Nobody, there was no other situation where they ever...
Even if it's not...
Stop. Okay.
Even if it's not, you're right. There's no situation where they've ever, you know, cut a limb off. Has there ever been a situation where they could have cut a limb off?
Yes.
Who?
And they never tried. There was, nobody's even talked about it before. So think about this. It's not just, like, think about, okay, Tyrese, right? That was a given, aside from the fact that everybody loved Tyrese and Rick felt like, you know, he will owe Tyrese forever for saving Judith, and the fact that everybody at that point was way more bonded together as a unit, I think, than they were at the time they were in the prison. But they weren't in the middle of a battle. There were just a few stragglers sitting around. And when Herschel got bitten, they were in the middle of a really crazy situation. They were trying to turn off the fucking alarms. They'd all been separated. They were overrun. That's why I thought, I don't think Rick would have put his efforts into saving Herschel in that situation at that time if it hadn't been for Lori.
you present a very convincing argument.
But anyway,
I have to give you credit. It is a very convincing argument. I'm not sure I can really, I can necessarily disagree with that. I think you've taken me to the proverbial side of Rick losing his shit.
Well, and Rick was
because yeah, I would have argued that I would have argued that Rick was actually simply utilizing his humanity. That this man had saved his life, had taken him in, had saved his son's life. This was a man that he cared a great deal about, you know. And he's a father. Herschel's a father. He understands that he has children to take care of, and he's willing to sacrifice and do whatever he can in order to take care of his kids. And that Herschel is also competent, and Herschel seems like he's a good advisor.
I think all of that stuff comes in, and the fact that Rick really grows to love him, but I'm not sure at that point it's quite there yet, though. It's later that it comes in. Especially
but I mean, that's the thing. Like, I really think it was. I mean, I really think it was at that point. I mean, you got to remember, like, Carl would have fucking died had it not been for Herschel. Like, Carl would have died, you know? And here you are, this guy, keeping his family at your house, at your home.
But he threw them out, right? He said, you can't stay. Rick, it's not that Rick didn't feel indebted to him. It's from the time he was in a... He was in a frenzy of panic over Lori and her about to, you know, and he's lost Carl, who's like just randomly shooting people. I don't think he was at a place where he could have taken all that into account and been like, I really owe that guy. I think he was just like, you know, like.
No, I think it was instinctual. No, I think it was more kind of instinctual. Like he's worried about all of these other things, but he's also worried about his friend who also brings all of this utility and benefit to his life. Like, there's no guarantee that one thing has to be greater than all of these others, you know, or that these other things aren't proportional or can't be proportional because of an immediate need. I mean, these things are all factors that we consider when we make decisions and how we make decisions. I mean, you know, now it's obviously difficult to quantify them because every situation and interaction relationship is different, and our reasons for doing things are always different. But I actually, you know, I mean, again, I think you make a very convincing argument, and I was sort of being a little bit condescending earlier when I was like, you move me to your side. The problem, I mean that from the bottom of my heart, but the problem is that when you have all of these elements at play, one thing is not necessarily greater than the rest. And yes, he was freaking out about Carl, and he's freaking out about Lori, and blah, 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 blah. But dude, people have been having kids for like thousands of years.
But you missed, I don't know, maybe you didn't miss it. But see, me being the person who deals with pregnant people, I don't know if you heard or not, and Rick definitely had this information. Lori had Carl by C-section. There was a very good chance that she was not going to be able to deliver vaginally, and that they were going to have to do a C-section. And the only person that was qualified to do that without killing Lori was Herschel. Oh.
He wasn't even fucking qualified, and he knows it. He's a goddamn veterinarian.
I'm sure he knows how to perform a C-section. I'm sure he probably could have done it fine. It's not as hard.
You think he could have done it okay? I don't know, dude.
It's actually quite simple. It's
a different kind of medicine.
It's not. I'm sure he's done it on cattle. It's really the same thing. There's skin, fascia, uterus, and all you have to do is get in there without cutting the baby, which you would know how to do. Muscle tissue on a cow is not that different. Get the baby out, sew her up, which you can clearly do. You pull out the placenta. It wouldn't be a great, you know, masterpiece of getting the bladder flap and a bunch of other stuff back where it goes. However, he could have easily done it.
Do you remember Kevin Costner's rendition of Robin Hood?
That was such an abomination.
You watched it.
And the reason I know is because I lived in the middle of nowhere. No, I'm going to tell you this first. I lived in the middle of nowhere with no electricity at the time that movie came out, and I drove like 45 minutes with the other two interns I was working with to see that piece of shit. That's how I remember I saw it. Anyway, go ahead.
All right. So I was just going to say that your discussion of a veterinarian cutting out a calf from a cow reminds me of, you know, Morgan Freeman, like, polishing his, you know, Schmittar and, you know, getting ready to cut out little John's baby, you know, out of his wife. I've seen it done on horses, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean,
yeah.
That's just what I immediately went to in my mind. I'm like, Morgan fucking Freeman, you know, of course.
Yes,
no matter what,
but
Morgan Freeman,
was
you know.
Surgeon. He could do surgery. Morgan
I understand
Freeman
that.
Look,
I've already said that it's. You brought up a valid point. My problem with it is that there are all these other things at play that also matter. And,
no, it's true. I don't think there's any way to really.
And there's at some point in time, they had this conversation about, you know, cutting off limbs in order to stave off the infection. I don't know if they heard that from somewhere. I don't think they heard it from someone else. I think they figured it out on their own, or at least thought to try it on their own. You know,
are you
so
sure
that
it was before
immediately.
That, though?
Yes, it absolutely was before that. Rick
okay,
didn't just
great.
Look at the dude's cap and be like, oh, fuck, he's bit. Let me cut it off. Like, he didn't just immediately think about that on the spot. That was talked about before. And storytelling-wise, it would only make sense if you talked about it before. It doesn't make any sense for him to just go and do it and have no idea whether or not it is or isn't going to work. Commit a violent act like that. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, logically, it doesn't make any sense. Practically, it doesn't make any sense. And nobody else would have helped him hold his freaking leg down.
I don't agree. His daughter was there. I mean, come on. Any desperate – you have two options. Try this insane thing that may or may not work, or watch him die.
No, they're not going to think about that. Again, they
all
had
right.
the conversation
anyway,
before.
Anyway, if you can find me that conversation, I will concede.
I will. Dude, I'm almost certain that they had the conversation.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Is there anything else?
Let's assume
for a second.
Let's assume for a second that they didn't. Let's assume for a second they didn't have that conversation. Okay? I would agree with you. If they did not have that conversation, then I think that there would be no way for me to explain, you know, that it wasn't a crazy or fanatical act.
It would absolutely be a crazy act. Fair enough.
So anyway. All right. Hey, thanks for the conversation. I had a good time.
Me too. I love this show. I appreciate you insisting that I watch it. I was glad I did.
I'm glad you watched it and now you're all caught up.
Yeah,
so
me too.
So that's something else we can add to our sort of weekly conversations. So
yeah.
All right. You have been listening to LogicCast. We're on every Thursday at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm Jared Smith. The wonderful lady opposite of me is Darby Macy, and we will see you next week. Bye, Darb.
Bye.
The ways of the underside. Bought a hot jacket for my North Bend Guinea.
What do you know?
'Cause they're hip to the pool and hip to the light.
What do you know?
And a hip with the ass 'cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
Don't you know about the ways on the underside?
What do you know?
Perfect waves in the night.
What do you know?
Crashes on my life.